Geek Speak, episode 37 of season 16, The Ubiquiti Edge Router X. A few years ago, while complaining to a friend about my spotty Wi-Fi, I was told about the company Ubiquiti and their excellent Wi-Fi access points. Now I have great Wi-Fi coverage, but my home network setup is not the preferred configuration. Luckily for all of us, we are blessed in the GeekSpeak community of many autodidactics. Alex Lias, our Southern California correspondent, has spent quite a bit of time learning about and configuring the Ubiquiti Edge Router X. Alex, welcome back to GeekSpeak.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a while.
Alex is a senior information security analyst at a financial services company, and he also runs a personal website called beardeddragon.org. If you have a bearded dragon, which is, of course, like a kind of an iguana type lizard, right? Is that a good way to describe it?
It's a little different than an iguana, but yeah, it's a lizard. It's probably the most common lizard type pet.
And if you have that type lizard pet, you probably have gone to his website, because it's like the de facto forum to talk about bearded dragons in all their glory. Do you still have, I know you still have the site, do you still have a bearded dragon?
No, actually, my last bearded dragon I had was a while ago now, probably 6 or 7 years ago, my last one had passed, and just with life being what it is, it's just not the same to have the room for, or the time for keeping the space for them and all that. So yeah, I just now keep the site going and keep my community going and help out where I can, and you know, but I don't actually have anymore myself.
Alex, these Ubiquiti Wi-Fi access points are pretty cool. But right now I have, I think, three of them plugged into hardwired network, my local network. And then I have one of them in a remote building, and that one is served through the Wi-Fi access. They all have two antennas, and so they can kind of share their Wi-Fi spread. And that gives pretty good coverage on the property I'm on and helps out a neighbor. And what I've done when I first set them up was I went ahead and set up a public kind of one that has no password. And where I live is way up in the woods, so it's not like a lot of people are going to be driving by and using it. But that has access to the internet. And then I have and it actually is restricted in its bandwidth usage to some degree. Mm-hmm. And then I have another Wi-Fi access network off of the same system. You know, it's my private one, which I use a password that I share with my friends pretty regularly. I don't have a lot of stuff plugged into the network. All of our devices that are of personal use use the private network, if you will. They are on two subnetworks, so they can't actually see each other, but they share the same physical wire, if you will, and they connect up to a dumb switch, or had connected to a dumb switch, and then from there to my cable provider. This is probably a similar setup to most people. Most people probably don't have multiple networks.
Mm-hmm. How are you actually separating them? Like you had the two different Wi-Fis, you're saying they're both connected to the same dumb switch, but they're on different subnets, or
they're not on different subnets. They're completely okay. Yeah, the same. In fact, what I'd done is I'd taken an old Wi-Fi router that has Tomato on it.
Yep, one of the open source firmwares for routers.
Right, and in that I set up the DHCP from that. So both of these are being served the same DHCP. So they are completely connected to each other in that way, right?
And that's a really common setup. That's what mine was until recently.
And I have a NAS device that I turn on when I do backups. I back up things, but then I also do like a home backup every once in a while. So I have like portable drives that back things up, and then in that network. And when I plug that in, I kind of plug it in for one night into the same base network, hardwired, and then back up my machine through the Wi-Fi, or maybe I tether my machine to it as well. But of course, during that time, my NAS, which, you know, to some degree it has some security, is completely open to the Wi-Fi in my environment. And again, I'm remote, so maybe it's not that much of a concern, but I've got neighbors, I don't know who that are close enough. I have guests sometimes, they might have an infected machine. All of this is kind of predicated that I don't have any Windows machines in the house. And so to some degree, I'm getting away with this. But of course, this is not the preferred way to deal with network home security, home network setups, because anytime anyone gets access, it kind of has free rein on any devices and can sniff ports and the whole deal, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, most of the routers you have are just a dumb switch, and usually if there's Wi-Fi, it's just bridged to anything you have physically connected. So essentially your Wi-Fi is all just dumb and connected. So yeah, it's just one big wide open network when you're inside the home network.
Another thing that happened with my network is that router, Tomato router that I was using, only had 100 megabyte. And I thought, well, this is stupid. I should have at least gigabyte network. So I actually researched and kind of saw Ubiquiti Edge Router X, which is like this $90 five port router.
Oh, no, it's much less than $90. This thing's $50.
$50, okay.
Yeah. My coworkers know because I'm always talking about the $50 router.
Yeah.
It's kind of a joke now.
$56.49 on Prime on Amazon right now.
Yep.
And we'll have all the stuff that we're talking about in the show notes for this episode. So the Ubiquiti Edge Router, same company. It's a gigabit Ethernet switch. It's got, or router. It's got there's five ports on it, but it's highly configurable.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the beauty of this thing, right?
Yeah. And one of the benefits also, each of the ports on it, it's not just a dumb switch. Every single port is a physically separate and logically separate Ethernet interface. And that's kind of an important difference between this and, say, your common Linksys or Netgear, or, you know, a lot of the ones you have in your general home routers. Also good to note is there's no Wi-Fi on it. So a lot of people are used to just your home router being kind of everything. It's got the Wi-Fi, if not, you know, two, if not three channels for Wi-Fi. And you have all, you know, the four network ports that you're used to on the back where you plug in your computers that need physical access. And then you have that other port that's called the internet or the WAN port. And that's where you plug in your cable modem or your DSL modem or, you know, whatever you happen to have as your upward bandwidth.
In our area, our good network is covered by Comcast. And Comcast actually will, you know, lease you, I think, for $5 a month, a router, a modem, which also is a Wi-Fi access point. And one of the things that they do is they put Xfinity Wi-Fi on that Wi-Fi access point. So even though you're paying them monthly for it, you're also spreading their Wi-Fi network to all their customers. Really kind of gross.
It's actually one of the first things I turn off is the any capabilities of those routers. I know my mom, when I had her home set up, they went in and switched cable providers, and the cable company came in and actually unplugged my router, put theirs in place, and suddenly I couldn't get into her home network anymore. And I went in and looked at this. I'm like, they completely removed it, and it's just really wide open. It was horribly done. So I like quickly turned off everything on theirs, turned theirs into nothing but a dumb bridge. Yeah. I'm like, just let the packets through and then go to my router. My router would be the controlling, secured environment for them. So, I hate those integrated Wi-Fi things.
Yeah, and I heard a story at some point, maybe on Security Now or something, where one of those cable providers was actually re-enabling, because, of course, they've got keys, if you will, on that modem sometimes, and they can re-enable those features, so they were turning back on. So I actually ended up bought a Motorola modem that fit my cable system and just don't have their hardware in my house at all. And it just doesn't have an antenna. So it relieves me of that concern.
But, I did the same thing.
Yeah. So tell me what can you do with this Ubiquiti Edge router and things like this? I mean, the reason why this one's kind of fun, why we're talking about it, is that it kind of hit by a storm and everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is a great deal.
Yeah.
And it does kind of all the things you need it to do, but I'm still, and I haven't done a lot of configuration on it. One of the things that confuses me is that though it's got physical ports on it, and I have my Wi-Fi routers going, or Wi-Fi access points going into those physical ports, the Wi-Fi, I do want that kind of public network and private network, right? So describe the configuration we actually want to have set up.
Okay. Well, I'll just kind of explain what I have on my network.
Great.
And that might kind of, because I go even beyond just simple Wi-Fi network. And these routers are mostly kind of on the edge of consumer, but also meant for small companies. And that's kind of what the features they have are kind of geared towards. But, you know, if you are interested in looking into that sort of how to set it up and how to get it going, it's really great as a home router to make a nice secure home network. And for me, the whole reason I've been looking to do this is because all these, you know, the buzzword of Internet of Things, which, you know, basically just means a whole lot of computers with without any sort of patching or security. It's a whole lot of stuff that's just out there, which is kind of scary.
And we have a lot of stories about them being having back doors in them. You can SSH into them, and all of a sudden you're in someone's network, and then you can use them as like a targeting point. And so it's just kind of a mess.
Yeah, I just got back from DEF CON, and there was a whole room just dedicated to Internet of Things.
Disasters.
Yeah. But they had a big refrigerator there where literally you could browse the web on the refrigerator, and the refrigerator had access to the internet and was establishing connections out to the manufacturer, and essentially the manufacturer could get back into your network. And the same thing for one of the devices I had, which prompted me to do this. I have a device that bridges my smart meter for electricity. And so I just basically it's pulling the smart meter to get regular updates about the energy utilization of my home. And I use it to kind of extract that data and graph it out. And I can then see down to like 10, 15 second granularity, the utilization of my home. Well, I found out this device was actually establishing a VPN connection back to the manufacturer, you know, and I'll do this in air quotes, even though it's radio, but, you know, for support reasons. Right. And they had some justification at the time and, you know, with the version that they had and the way they had to do updates, but now they don't have it and it still does connections. So I just immediately blocked it. But what I've noticed is that this is the trend that we're seeing for these Internet of Things is they're establishing VPN connections back out. They're actually checking out traffic on your existing network and feeding back statistics, you know, supposedly, again, for helping out and support to make sure that the device isn't being affected adversely by your network. But
and even if they have all even if all those intentions are perfectly valid and true, it doesn't mean that it makes your security, it doesn't help you really.
No.
And they might have a security vulnerability where all of a sudden that data is of your personal data is being shared. So it's not like it's whether they're doing it for a good reason or not. It's that them doing it at all is weakening your privacy and your security.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, they literally could connect into my network and have full access just like they're on the local network because they had a VPN connection established.
Just like one of my neighbor's friends could do the same thing with me right now.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
So what do you do about that?
So what I ended up doing, my original configuration was kind of a, you know, your typical, I think it was a Netgear that I had, or maybe it was a Linksys on my edge router, and I had another router inside, and I had Wi-Fi created, and it was all one big open network. When I eventually got this Ubiquiti Edge Router X, started looking into it, and the way I configure it is I take one port, and I say that's my internet port, so that's, you know, where it connects out to the internet, and I've got four other ports on there.
And that one port, of course, connects to your modem.
Correct. That one connects to my router, or my cable modem, in my case.
So if you think of it from that perspective, that thing is just the public IP address that you get from your cable company or whatever is going to that port. So
correct.
That's defined as subnet.
And I set it up to do DHCP for that port to get it so it gets its own IP on that port from the DHCP server from my cable provider.
Sure.
And so then the other ports, I break them down, and I've had a couple extra spare, you know, Linksys and Netgear. I've got probably three or four in my house now, and I use those as my cheap. Well, I say cheap. They were expensive when I got them, but I have them on hand, so I use them as my wireless access points. I'm not really using it for all the router capabilities that they have. I just bridge all the ports together and have the Wi-Fi come straight through. So really, it just becomes a dumb access point for wireless. So I've got one of those hooked up to one of the ports. I've got one I have just for my general home computers, so my personal laptop, my wife's laptop. I even currently am putting the entertainment system stuff, so like the Apple TVs, and I have a Mac Mini that's my media center. Things like that are all on that same network.
So that first Wi-Fi router is plugged into one of the ports, and from that you connect all the kind of things you trust.
Right, exactly. Okay. And now in doing this, when I say it's a network, I'm actually allocating a /24 subnet, which means basically a range of 255 IPs. Usually that's what your whole home network is. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying like 192.168.6.x is my personal computers and media center type systems.
Okay, so and that subnet is being served from only one of the ports on your edge router, and
exactly.
The edge router is providing the DHCP for that, I'm assuming, as well.
Yep, exactly. So yeah, the edge router provides DHCP for all the ports, and I have that configured turned on. You can actually turn it on or off.
In doing this, this is called like a virtual LAN, right? That's what they actually call it on the edge router X?
No, you can actually take within a single port. You can also define your VLANs within that segment. I'm going to look at tinkering with it. VLANs are not generally used for, not really intended to be a security control.
Okay, so this is a real
organization.
LAN. So this would you just call this a LAN?
Exactly. Okay. I just call it a single network.
And that Wi-Fi access point that you have actually serving Wi-Fi, you're using like WAP2 or something to make sure that only people you trust can connect to it.
Yeah, WPA2 is what I use for the encryption and authentication to the wireless, exactly.
And of course, that wireless access data, that setup is through that access point, whatever the unit is that you bought.
Exactly. Okay. And anything that connects to that network is within that one. Well, anything that connects to that Wi-Fi network is in that personal that computers and exactly in that LAN.
Okay.
Next so point. Then I allocate another one. My next one is for Internet of Things. I don't have a whole lot. I've got a few things. But I have a scale, like one of the scales that kind of keeps track, and it's
miles. One of my friends kept on saying, "You've got to get one of these." My friend Al, who does the show sometimes, "You've got to get one of these; they're great." Do you actually use the data collection of the bathroom scale?
Yeah, actually, I do regularly. Been trying to keep my weight down, especially now I'm trying to get my cholesterol down. So I've been watching that, and I use that scale all the time, almost every day. And I get it on the little app, and I find it useful. I don't mind that my data is being shared up to them. It's just a risk decision on my own part. But yeah, that's one of the devices that I have on the IoT network.
And of course, that needs Wi-Fi. So this thing you plug in that second port is a Wi-Fi access point.
Yeah, probably. I have another access point hooked up to that. That's my older Linksys router I use for that.
And do you use password protection on that one as well?
Yes. I don't let any of my networks be wide open. Even my guest network has a simple password on it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have to make sure the bathroom scale can do WPA2 to connect to it or something?
Yeah, it can. Okay, it's all WPA2, so yeah, it's got no problem with that. If it didn't, I'd probably look at somehow segmenting it or creating a separate Wi-Fi on it. Mm-hmm. So then, yeah, we got my third network.
Well, let's talk about the Internet of Things network for a second.
Sure.
Do you allow any, I'm assuming you don't allow any incoming traffic into that network, right?
Any incoming. Let's see. So,
meaning you don't tunnel anything, any public service in the access. Like right now, no one can SSH into your scale because there's no way to actually address it.
The IoT network is actually the most locked down. So, I'm trying to think, do we want to try to go over firewall rules? Because there's a whole other huge section we can probably overlap a lot. It might
maybe.
Be good to go over structure.
Do you set up firewall walls in this edge router?
I have, yes. The edge router has firewall rules.
Let's go through
each of the zones, and that's a whole other. I'll get into zones and all that too.
Yeah, let's go through the ports and stuff. So, really locked down. Are you allowing outside traffic from your Internet of Things? You've got to allow some outside traffic, right?
Outside traffic.
Sorry. Yeah.
By default, I block everything for the IoT network. Nothing gets out unless I have an explicit rule to say I can let it out. And so, for that, there are certain things. For example, the Withings, I let it connect to the Withings services that are out there.
Is that the weight thing? Is that the scale?
Okay. The Withings is the scale.
And when you lock that scale down and you know it needs to access their services because it's you're giving you pretty charts and all that cool reporting stuff and you get to your phone, that trade-off that you're doing with them, are you saying, hey, that scale, that's the IP address you have and you IP address can access this network outside? Or are you saying you can access all of port 80? Like, what kind of level or control are you doing to the scale?
I say you can get out to the internet zone on, to this specific IP or set of IPs on this specific port. So I get as narrow as I can. That's the security guy in me. That's basically let's get it down as narrow as possible.
And of course, part of this is that means that if they do some weird thing like they're bought or sold or something, their DNS names change and all of a sudden they, do an update of your scale and the scale no longer can access, it'll stop working and you'll have to look into that again, right?
Exactly. If something breaks or they change something, then yeah. But of course, if they change something, it's usually through an update or something that gets applied to the scale. So
yeah. Okay. So part of this, I mean, I don't know if everyone wants to harden it at that level, right? But I think that, so I mean, do you think that everyone should do that, or do you do it because it's kind of engaging for you?
I think if you're going to segment your network where you're separating your Internet of Things from your rest of your computers like I do, you should default deny and only allow it with what it needs to. The way I've done it is I have it log all the things that are hitting the default rule. Uh-huh. And that way I know when I hook in a new device and I see a whole bunch of new things coming up on the default rule, I can say, oh, okay, it needs this, 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 and this. It's in the logs and I can kind of address that.
So once you connect like the scale, the first time you connect the scale and it got DHCP service from your edge router, you then saw what IP it did and then you went ahead and hard assigned that IP. So from there on out, the DHCP would always give that MAC address the same IP address. And then you can set up your firewall wall rules based off of that IP.
Yep. And okay. I organize my network into, you know, blocks for different types of devices. IoT is more of one big chunk, but basically I pick the IPs out of different spaces and say, okay, this MAC address is going to get that IP. And, you know, obviously devices could pick any IP they want, but that's one of the reasons I default deny as opposed to default mm-hmm. allow.
Yeah.
It won't be able to do anything if it's not on the right IP to begin with.
Right. Cool. Okay. So that's your two networks, your personal network you kind of trust things on, your crazy lock everything down, make sure you restrict completely first, and then open things up as it's needed. So right. you're really aware of what it's doing. Yep. I like that a lot. And the logs that the block deny logs that the edge router, the firewall rules, actually logs them and shows you what they are, so you can kind of figure out, oh, that looks like it's one of the DNS entries that's probably posting my weight today. That
kind yeah, of exactly. I log up most rules or most packets I log.
And the edge yeah. router can do this?
Yeah. So far, everything that I'm talking about in terms of all the controls, the edge router, and we have barely touched the surface.
Right, okay.
We can go on to the next
port. Let's move to the next port. Yeah.
So next port is my guest network. That's where I hook up I actually use one of the other routers the same router I use for my personal computer and home entertainment system type stuff because it has multiple Wi-Fi channels. Those are actually separate interfaces as far as the device is concerned. And I have the WAN port, and then there's that, you know, the block of ports for the dumb switch. I can actually make two separate bridges out of that one router. That way I can kind of use as much as I can. If I spend a chunk of money on that router, I might as well use it as much as I can.
Okay, so let me parse that again. You have an old router that you spent a bit of money yep. on. It's got two Wi-Fi access antennas, if you will. And it three, okay. And it also has multiple physical LANs, if you will. It used to have a WAN, which was used for connecting up to your cable modem. Right. And then it also had the LAN interface. And so because of that, you can configure this whole thing such that one plug into your guest network that and serves one antenna from that, and the other plugs into your kind of personal network and serves an antenna from that. So even exactly. though it's one box, it's actually physically two Ethernet subnets, and therefore
it's creating
safe.
Two separated wireless access points essentially within one box.
Okay. And do you think that, and are you using all three antennas or just two?
Well, actually, I use all three. I have two of them being used, being bridged to one of the for my internal personal stuff, and that's okay. mostly just to give myself some range. One runs on the 2.5 gigahertz, and the other one runs on a 5.
So you can kind of switch around depending on what you want to do, or if you have a microwave,
where in the house I am, or yeah. something like that. Yeah.
And so that configuration, what software are you running on that router?
Those are running DDWRT, uh-huh. Which I've been running as my primary router firmware for a while.
It's just like Tomato, if you will. It's an open yeah. source router firmware. So a lot of these open source projects figure out how to install on multiple routers. So if you have an old router, sometimes you can bring it up to speed with a fresh operating system, which is pretty cool.
Right. And I like DDWRT. I'm just, once I got onto the whole Ubiquiti, I was blown away by how much easier it is and how many more features it is, and I'm not constantly fighting it. So yeah. that's one of the things I love.
So I think I've just run into my first kind of block on how I'm going to set this up, because I think that the Ubiquiti Wi-Fi access points I have, which are external two antenna deals, they have two Ethernet ports in them for bridge through. You know, you can run a cable in and you can run a cable out. Mm-hmm. So it's possible they have the ability to do two networks, physical networks. But I'm not certain. So I'll have to look into
yeah,
that stage.
That'll be how they depends on how they define the interfaces and how the hardware is set up.
Yeah, it's a smart company, so it's possible they're doing it. They're doing it in such a way you can do this. But it's also possible that it's for is PoE pass through. So.
Right, yeah, that's true. So, yeah, that's the guest network then. And I've got pretty simple, you know, it's just a simple Wi-Fi network where friends come and I say, here's your simple password. You can connect in, and you know, I can change that password however frequently I want. That network is not allowed to talk to anything else. It can talk to the internet.
It can talk to the internet all ports or just some?
I pretty much let it go wide open. Mm-hmm. Figure it's not talking to anything on my environment, and most people, I don't know what their, you know, what friend, my friends want, might want to do. But
do you log it though, so that you would notice if your friend's machine was,
oh, everything's, you know, had locked.
A, yeah. Okay.
Again, security guy and log analytics is one of my favorite topics. So,
and yeah. We actually might have to do a whole nother show on analytics, because you just an amazing gift for GeekSpeak in setting up some log analytics. Okay. But let's move on. Yeah. So we pretty much, I'm assuming we've covered your setup now.
One last port. I call it my data center. Which is actually hooked up to an Ethernet over power, as opposed to power over Ethernet, device. So basically, it's a device I plug a network cable into that plugs into the fifth port on the Ubiquiti router. The other end plugs into this Ethernet over power, and that plugs into the wall. And that basically bridges and uses the power lines for Ethernet network traffic. And I do that because I have a space down in the garage. This is my little personal, I guess, man cave, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And on the other end, down in the garage, I have a paired up device that then plugs into the power and then gives me another network cable out. And I hook that up to a little switch down in the garage. And I have a stack of Raspberry Pis. I used to have a Mac Mini until it recently died. I've got a bunch of hard drives I use down there that are all hooked up to the different systems.
Is this where your logs go?
This is where my logs go. This is I have a backup server running CrashPlan down there. I've got, actually, I got CrashPlan to run on a Raspberry Pi, which is pretty slick.
What's CrashPlan?
CrashPlan is a backup system. It's free to use for the basic features. It lets you back up to it's kind of like Carbonite and the other ones out there. It lets you, the free version lets you back up to either another hard drive. You can back up to any of your other computers over the network or over the internet. It also lets you pair up with a friend and then back up to one of their computers over the network or the internet.
Nice.
And if you want, they also have a cloud service, which we pay for our more important data, and back up to the cloud service. And it's all encrypted locally before it's sent out to wherever, so you don't need to trust your friends. You know, you just send them the data, and it's like, I don't care what you can do with it, because you can't get to the data.
Are you doing a backup with a friend?
I had tinkered with it for a while back. I just never really consistently had it. And honestly, if you're doing significant backups, it's sucking up bandwidth.
Right.
So usually they're not the ones most affected, because it's your uplink that's going to hurt more.
Right. But the kind of way you want to do it is have them set up a setup system and you guys both back up each other's data. And that way, if your house burns down, you've got a backup over there or vice versa.
Exactly. And that's why I just use the cloud service. Yeah. It costs, you know, what, $150, and I can use it on up to 10 computers. And I think I also use it on my Bearded Dragon site. So I back all that stuff up to the cloud, and that used to come to my house. So now that bandwidth's been freed up.
Mm-hmm.
So
Oh, I see. Right, because the Bearded Dragon just goes straight to the cloud service. Cool.
Right, because that's already out on the internet on Amazon, so I just let it go straight out to...
So the Ethernet overpowered cross thing that you've got, what is that? What kind of bandwidth does it do?
God, I tested it. I can't remember. It's around the 100 to 200 megabit range.
Well, that's pretty good.
It's not great. I mean, I wouldn't stream, you know, high definition video over it, but for backups and logs and for simple little type things like that,
which is all can kind of run slow. It doesn't really matter that much, right? Everybody's got some cash, so
exactly.
And why aren't you just? I mean, do you own your house?
No, renting a condo.
So that's a reason not to run Ethernet cable through it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, got it. And so now we have a problem, though. You're doing backups on another subnet. All these are subnets, so they all have their own networks.
Yes.
You're running backups on a network, but it's a different network. So how do you get your personal computer or your wife's computer to backup through the network over to that network? How does that work?
All right. Well, just think of it as basically, while they are all separate networks, think of it as you're backing up to a system on the internet. As far as when you're on one of the networks, it's the same thing. It's just a network that's not my network. So I tell my wife's computer, actually, CrashPlan kind of works this out on its own. Once you're linked with a friend or linked with between your computers, they all communicate where their devices or where their IPs are. So that way, if I go travel and somebody's backing up to, say, my personal laptop, they technically could back up to wherever I am. So the IP is communicated through the the backup protocol. Okay. My wife's system knows where the destination is for the, you know, the IP address is for the backup device, or the.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. You said your personal network is 192. I'm sorry about the security aspect of this, but I guess this is pretty safe to talk about.
Yeah, it's fine.
You wouldn't necessarily talk about it at work, what the networks were, because any knowledge you share is actually security problems, but this is relatively safe. So you're using your,
and figure it out either.
Yeah, yeah. And also maybe you're lying about the numbers, so that's fine too. But anyway, your personal network is 192.168.6.x. And this backup one that's down in the garage, what's that IP address?
So we'll just call that one .9.x.
9.x. So okay, got
it. 168.9.x. So okay. Basically, you know, if you do six, I basically took, and again, I am actually throwing the numbers out. I use different numbers. But 192, you are talking to a security guy after all.
Yes.
So anyway, let's just say 192.168.6 is, you know, personal and home entertainment. .7.x is going to be my IoT. 8.x is going to be my guest network, and .9.x is my data center.
Okay. And so your data center has
my data center.
Your data center has the service running that actually can back up, just like all the other devices. They kind of talk to each other in this kind of meshy way. And that one of the machine that does that has an IP address. Let's just say it's .9.1 on that network. Or no, that would be the router. 9.2. Okay. Mm-hmm. So 9.2 is your backup for 192.168.9.2 is your backup system. So your wife's computer to back up knows that IP address.
Yes. It knows that IP address. Okay. And it just says, through routing, it's routing controls. It knows its local network, and it knows that anything that is not my local network, send it to my default gateway. And
which is the router.
The gateway is the router, and it got that through the DHCP connection when it connected to mm-hmm. that port or that network. It got its info, and it was told, here's your router, here's your DNS, you know, all the basics. So it says, well, this isn't on my network, so I'm going to hand it to the gateway. The gateway is the Ubiquiti router. It says, well, I know where to put this. That's going to go down on that interface to the data center, and it goes to the data center.
And now, that's perfect and great. That's perfect and great, but you don't want your Internet of Things devices to be able to do that.
Correct. So that kind of knowledge of which way things go is where the routing is done. Now, on top of that, you also then have your firewalls, which it's not how or which way should it go, it's whether it should go. So that's more, I guess, think of it as authorization at that point. Uh-huh.
And you have a rule in there that says, hey, I know your wife's IP address. This thing can access that other one. It's okay.
Exactly. And it's actually fairly complicated the way it gets set up. But one of the nice things, and this is one of my favorite things about the Ubiquiti router, for a home $50, I got to get in this $50 router. I got to go buy the domain.
It's so cheap, it's free.
Yeah.
Should be free, yeah.
It's just crazy. And I bought two, actually. One is a staging so I can prep it and play with it without my wife yelling at me about the internet being broken.
Cool.
This one... the number of features just blows my mind. One of which is it has support for zones. Now, it's something they don't advertise heavily in their documentation. It's not in the main GUI interface, but in the command line interface, or if you go to in the web interface, they also have what they call the config tree, which is like raw access to the configuration.
Wow.
You can set and define zones. Zones is something that's a semi-new in the firewall world-ish. It's something that more your higher end next generation firewalls will do at corporations. It's not something you typically see on a personal Linux box or something. I think they're kind of hitting the concepts of zones within on some of the newer versions of CentOS and stuff with ish. They're still using IP tables, but they're trying to zonify it, I guess.
Okay.
The whole idea of a zone is you kind of allocate a network, or you can technically say multiple networks. You can say that this network is collectively a zone where you say these have a similar security
rules
profile. Well, yeah, profile purpose. I guess okay. These are similar devices from a security perspective. In a corporate world, you would have like your databases isolated as their own zones, separate from your servers, which will be in a DMZ, separate from maybe your application servers, separate from where your infrastructure might be.
And this helps you conceptualize separations of concerns, but it also allows you to do collections of rules against them. So, for example, let's talk about a zone. Like you probably have your personal computers as a zone.
Right.
And wife's machine and such.
Exactly. And in, with firewall rules, traditionally, you say, well, on this port, I'm going to create this rule. So anything going into this port from, you know, from the perspective of the router, anything coming in from that port, apply these rules. Anything going out on this port, apply these rules. And that's kind of your traditional way of doing it. But then if you think, okay, traffic coming from the internet needing to go to the data center, now I've got to define the rules for in and out on the port that is the internet, and I got to find the rules for the in and out that is to the data center and make sure that they all line up. And if one of them is off, it's broken.
Yeah, and everyone has a story, the first time they ever dealt with IP tables and firewalls, of locking themselves out of the system.
Yeah, and that's
like
just
the
one system.
Default way to do. Right, but you're talking, every one of these ports you've been talking about has all the capabilities of in and out and settings for all the other networks, like including the public WAN.
Exactly. So the idea and the benefit of zones, at least as Ubiquiti has done them, and I've seen it, personally, I like it more on how some of the other higher-end routers will use them, where you could just create firewall rules and say, you know, from any of these zones to any of these zones on these ports, these IPs, et cetera, you can kind of include them as part of a rule with one-to-many. Uh-huh. In this case, it's kind of a one-to-one. The way they define it is they say, well, here's, say, my home computer, personal computer's zone and my internet zone. What I do is I set up a rule set for the zone-to-zone communication. So I basically say, if for all traffic that flows from the home network to the data center, these are all the rules that apply to that flow.
Okay.
So that's kind of the way that and vice versa, from the data center to the home network, it would be a whole different set.
Do you call that a zone, or do you call the zone is the sum of the machines on one of those networks?
No, the zone is the entire network flow that I allocate to that port.
Okay. So why not just think of it as a port rather than a zone?
Because zone is actually a term that's used. You could think of it as a port, but again, you know, you'd end up wanting to give them names at some point just for managing.
Sure.
If you're just doing everything at a port level, again, you're going to have all your firewall rules are going to be in out for each port.
Right.
And you then have to manage on this port and that port, and they have to be in sync properly or things will just not be right. With a zone, I can say just flow from this zone to that zone, and the rules apply for that zone pair.
Cool. So now all this configuration you're doing about making sure that things can get access to other places is all through these zone definitions.
Exactly. Well, yeah. And actually, the way I created a script, because it's, if you think about it, for every pair of zones, you have a rule set. That means if you have each port, so the five ports, including the internet zone, that's five different zones. Plus, there is a zone that they call the local zone, which is any communication to or from the router itself. Mm-hmm. And then I also have VPN set up, which is yet another separate zone.
Are you doing that with the router?
Yeah, with the router as well. Also does that.
So just to be clear, you've got, I'm assuming the only reason you'd use that is you're outside on the public network. You VPN to the router, so the router, the $50 router, does that too. And then from that point, because you've tunneled, there's a zone rule that says VPN traffic can exist from the public zone, the internet zone, to the VPN zone. That's allowed. And so that's how you got in.
Actually, no. For the initial connection of VPN, that is from internet zone to the router, because I'm first talking to the router, and then the router puts me into the VPN zone when I get my DHCP assignment.
Okay, and so then once you're there, you've got a you've got VPN started, and then from there, there's a zone of VPN, so you also have a VPN rule. The VPN zone rule going to your data center is also working, and that's how you do backups when you're away.
Exactly. And so with all these permutations, you've got, you know, five ports plus the local router plus the VPN. That's a total of seven zones. And there's a rule set for each pair of zones, permutation, bidirectional.
Right.
So you got to think that's basically 7 times 6. That's 42 different rule sets. And
I started doing that manually,
and it was a pain.
How do you run the script?
Well, what I found is another great feature of this is they have what's called feature wizards. So I looked into that, not very well documented at all. Their documentation for it is really just, here's some examples figured out. But it's simple enough that that's actually more or less enough.
Simple enough for a security expert.
For a programmer. Any programmer could go in and just understand, this is what they're doing and how the templates work. And you basically could be in any language you want. Here's their interface for how they pass you data and what you have to output. So fairly simple, but they created a wizard that I prompt the user, and I'm going to put this out in the community forums when I refine it a little bit, but I prompt the user, me in this case, for enter all the names of the zones, what port the zone is assigned to, and there was some other field I had for it. And it goes through and generates all of the rule sets on the back end. It assigns that, you know, it creates all the zones and maps the rule sets to the zones. I mean, there's it probably comes out to a couple hundred commands.
You're running this inside the router?
Yeah, through the web interface, because I'm able to create the wizard.
That's amazing.
So I just
this router is incredible.
And it populates all of those things for me through the script I wrote. It does that all populations. And I'm just running on the back end. My script is just basically saying, okay, here's all your zones. And I'm generating all of the different commands for, on the back end to Viata, which is actually the back end interfaces that they use. It's one of the open source interfaces for software.
Okay, for setting up zones and firewalls.
Yeah.
And this specifically, the script that you ran that does this whole wizard setup and all that is part of Edge Router. They just don't document it very well.
Yeah, exactly.
What language is it in?
Viata, or you mean the wizard?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's a web interface, and they'll just call the executable. They hook the executable on the back end. So you register it. You create the wizard executable. It could be in a C compiled binary if you really wanted to, but it could be. I did mine in Python. Their examples were in shell script. So as long as you output the expected output, and they say here, you know, you take the input off of a command line or as your command line parameters.
That's just Unix piping, basically. So, yeah. So it is a Linux system, and it has Python installed.
Yeah, actually, underneath it is a Debian-based Linux. I'm not sure the exact distribution that they base it on, but it's a Debian-based Linux.
And are they managing updates and patches, or do you do that yourself?
I actually get the updates and patches from them. They don't manage it directly. You have to get the firmware, and then you update the firmware. So I make sure I get notified when there's updates for it.
So you'd like register yourself on their site?
Yep. And I keep an eye on it. I'll have to make sure if I lose track, I have to make sure I stay on top of that, because I wouldn't want to have any security holes that are exposed. So, I got all those zones all set up, and we have the rules for all the flow, so I can then have that organized. And I know if I need something from the internet to talk to something on the data center, you know, it's not just IP based, but it also enforces that it also has to be these two ports that it flows across. And that's the benefit of the zones from a security perspective, is it's not just IP and ports. It's, you know, and port numbers rather, as opposed to physical ports. It's also adding in the physical port as part of the rule, because it's the zones are tied to the rule. So it's like an extra layer of saying, not just to these two IPs, but specifically IPs flowing across these interfaces.
Right. And that real interface separation is the major reason why this actually all works. Because, of course, if you do this type of thing on the same interface, then on the same network, on TCP IP, you can quickly respond to an IP that's not yours. You can actually inject yourself into flows. But when you have physical separation like this, or real port separation, all the traffic that's going between these ports is actually being managed by the router. The router is actually pushing those through. It's not like a hub.
Correct. Right,
exactly. And it applies these rule sets to that. How do you feel about performance? Have you tested performance, or are you, you know, it's going to be working fine?
I haven't pushed it. I've read up on it before I got it, actually. I made sure I understood it. While they're all gigabit interfaces, I think most reports have been that they can push about 500 megabits sustained.
Yeah.
So, which is, again, my outbound connection is nowhere near that. So that's more than enough for me.
Yeah. And also the security part of it kind of compensates for that anyway.
Yeah. And the more features you turn on, I'm sure it's going to hit a little bit more overhead as well.
Yeah. Well, that is awesome. Thank you for the rundown on this. I will take a look at my Wi-Fi access points and see if I can actually separate them into two. What do you call it when it's one device with two interfaces? Effectively, right?
Actually, I don't know what you would call it. I mean, basically, if you have your two Wi-Fis and your two physical interfaces, I just basically view it as two bridged networks, but I'm not sure what you would call that.
We'll see if I can do it. It's the one piece of this that I knew that was maybe kind of troubling. I might have to get other antennas for my public network, which would be fine.
Let me quickly run down through a few more features. I know
Please
we probably
do.
Don't have
yeah,
time
yeah.
to go through everything. Let's just run through them, because this is what blows my mind. The more I dug into it, I kept going, for $50, for $50, oh my God, for $50. So zone-based firewall rules. Okay, we talked about that. It also has deep packet inspection. Now, when I first researched and bought it, I didn't think it would come with it. I thought their higher-end routers had this. What deep packet inspection is the router is basically opening up the packet beyond just the layer 4, which is, you know, how do I get this packet forwarded on into the right place. Exactly. This is going into looking at the actual application data to figure out what's going on. What is this? You know, not just is it port 80, but is the traffic that flowed across this actually HTTP traffic or other right. ways of doing signatures? You know, if the they'll generate signatures, say, on IPs and stuff, knowing that these IPs are Facebook, it identifies that this traffic is Facebook traffic.
That's cool.
And what's really cool with that is you can then also apply that into your firewall rules. So you can say, allow the flow of this traffic to the internet, but only with Facebook traffic, or turn off Facebook traffic.
Right.
Now, these are signatures. So if it fails to identify the signature and your rules are dependent on it, it'll either break or let too much traffic through. Right. So it's something to keep in mind. But they have some, I think the last I checked, they had about 3,300 different applications identified, and that could be anything from like Facebook, but also includes like SSH. It identifies.
Wait, is that's all built into the system?
That's
all the identification, all those apps.
$50 router, yes.
Okay.
And they give regular daily updates. It gets
so the rule
subscription updates.
The rule based system of deep inspection is actually extremely useful for security perspective, because sometimes, of course, a vulnerability will because of a malformed or a very specifically formed packet. And so if it does deep packet, you can throw those kinds of things away. So if you're really being crazy about it, you could find all the different vulnerabilities. Like maybe, you know, you find out that your bathroom scale, not that it actually needs incoming traffic to happen, but that certain types of attacks might work a certain way. And so you could just block that kind of attack and actually have kind of a weaker thing inside your that you give internet access to inside your Internet of Things that still kind of protects it from maybe a vulnerability that you found out about.
Right. It's to some extent. I mean, it's not going to get into vulnerabilities because it doesn't quite do like snort or anything for intrusion detection.
Okay.
But it does kind of just add into ability to add extra controls into your firewall rules.
But because of the giant library of applications they've got and the reporting, you actually know what's happening.
It's small on the scale of things. If you think about how many different things there are on the internet to identify, 3,000 is nothing.
But isn't it the most popular 3,000? Like, you know, it's going to be a lot of it. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And they're growing. I mean, when I first got it just, a month or two ago, it was 3,100. So they've already added 200 in that time.
How many updates have you gone through since then, firmware updates?
I haven't updated the firmware at all. They haven't had a new release since I got it. I think they release updates either quarterly or every 6 months for the firmware itself. But they have, you set it up for checking for the signature updates daily.
Cool.
So yeah, that's pretty slick. And then one of the things, if you think about it from a parent's perspective, you have kids, you can set, oh yeah, here's another thing. Firewall rules can also be time-based. So you can basically say at 10 PM, Facebook gets turned off for the kids' network.
That's beautiful.
Kind of thing. Or, you know, if you separate a Wi-Fi just for the kids that they're not allowed to connect to your Wi-Fi, you can also, they have identification for adult sites. So you can block all traffic related to adult or streaming media or, you know, those sort of things. You can, based on the existing apps, you can kind of group rules for that as well.
So. I love that, I mean, I think as a parent, I don't think I'd block much stuff. I don't think I'd block anything I don't right now. But having an awareness of being able to look at it and see what's going on, I think is a really important thing to do with, you know, the way the network works.
Yeah. But you can also explicitly add a rule to allow it. And even if you never block it, you always allow it. You can add a rule and say, always log it.
Cool. Man. Okay, that's neat. Deep pack inspection plus a library to tell you what's going on. Because I've looked at traffic flow before, just for fun, you know. And I used to have a job where we had a security expert come in and kind of did us a day of training on this kind of pack inspection, what's going on in your network, you know. And the truth is, without tools, there's no way to know what the heck's going on, right?
It's crazy.
Too much data. Yeah, too much data. But to look really quickly and go, oh, look, 80% of my traffic outbound is port 80, and then here are some other things. Okay, there's mail and so on. And pretty soon, oh, there's an unknown. What's that? Like, that level really does bring a different kind of awareness to you.
Yeah, and as a general like admin for the router, they have a page called Traffic Analysis, and it breaks it down all of your devices that have been communicating. And when you have Deep Packet Inspection turned on, you click on them, and it expands out and says, here's the bandwidth for each of the different applications it's identified for that particular device on your network.
That's awesome.
So it makes you really quickly identify where your traffic is going.
Okay, that's really cool. Got another thing you can do that's amazing?
Oh, let's see. Other things that probably it's going to be hard to explain, but NetFlow is one handy thing. You can enable NetFlow, which basically is, it tries to keep track of all the different packets and summarize the flow of traffic from, say, from this IP to this other IP on this port to this port, so you can better monitor and log and do analysis, which is something I'm kind of getting more into.
Why?
Why
are you getting into it? Yeah. What's interesting about it?
It's visibility. I just like to be able to see what sort of things are going on my network. Like you said, it gets really complicated in trying to do it if you had no tools. This is one of the tools that lets you see these are the flows that have been occurring, and I don't have to watch it real time. I can log everything, and through tools like Splunk, which I know I recently introduced you to, I can just create reports, and then I just have a dashboard I can look at every once in a while and say, okay, yep, everything looks normal, or hey, what the heck is that bandwidth spike on that on that particular device? I can quickly identify what happened. Like, for example, mail on my laptop had on the Mac had freaked out and was doing some weird loop, and I couldn't figure out why my bandwidth consumption on Amazon had gone up, and it had gone up like significantly. The bandwidth went from, I'd say about 60 or 80% increase in how much I was paying for bandwidth on the Bearded Dragon server, which is also where I run my personal mail server. And I looked into it with these tools, and I said, oh, it looks like I'm getting most of my traffic is on my IMAP server. And I looked and noticed that every time I gave the mail app focus, it was redownloading thousands of messages for some reason. I had to delete accounts out of mail.app from my server on the Amazon cloud.
Yeah.
So through that sort of analysis, I was able to figure it out because I saw the flow of traffic. I was able to say, oh, well, that's exactly where it is. That's where it's coming from. Let me look at that. And that's how I knew to look at my app on my Mac and then kill my accounts and regenerate them. And my problem's gone. And I'm not now saving money on my bandwidth.
So was it the default mail client on your Mac?
Yeah.
Apple's mail client?
It just freaked out a couple months ago.
I had a lot of trouble with that default Mac client and doing IMAP through Gmail. Years ago, just got into situations like that. And it's kind of, Gmail's not exactly doing IMAP. I mean, their own system is not IMAP, but they give an IMAP interface.
Right.
Anyway, IMAP, of course, is one of the two mail protocols for mailbox handling. POP3 is the other one. So I'm totally curious what my television is doing, because now I've got one of the smart TVs, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I've got that because, you know, I work at Netflix, and we watch things as a family. So I got a TV after I started working at Netflix. That's how good the service is, I guess. But because I never had a TV before. And this thing, of course, I bought the one that we kind of recommend because it's got a good software package for the Netflix app. And I talked to some of the engineers that work on the TV stuff, and they're like, yeah, this is a good model. So I got it. But of course, it's got tons of apps. And as I install them and stuff, I'm like, you know, what is it doing? What kind of logging is it doing? I turned off the mic that the system has, but I would like to see if it's really off, you know? And so that kind of inspection, I think, is something that bringing some level of awareness of that makes a lot of sense. And I feel like the more you don't know what's happening, the more it becomes magic and the more passive you get about the world in general. So there's some level that being engaged and understanding makes you a citizen that's more conscious of your world.
Yeah, just being aware. That's one thing I liked about that traffic analysis page is you don't have to know all the things that I know, you know, to be able to do that. You just need to click the button to say turn it on, and it just starts telling you what applications, as they call it, your computers are talking to.
Awesome.
So that's just great to have that awareness and just know what's going on.
I gotta say that, yeah.
I was gonna say just that awareness is what woke me up to realizing that my devices were creating VPN connections to my network. So I'm now liking to stay a little bit more aware, and I definitely encourage others to be aware of what your devices on your network are doing.
What do you mean devices, VPN, network?
Well, like the device I had that was doing energy consumption, yeah, was establishing a VPN connection out. And now that I blocked it, I see it trying all the time. And it tries different IP addresses and different methods of connecting out. And I'm like, you are really persistent, aren't you? But it doesn't get out anymore.
What is the smart meter? Is it the PG&E provide smart meter or something?
No, this is one I bought years ago called Rainforest Eagle. It's like $100 on Amazon, and it's a simple little box basically, and you plug it in. It doesn't have any Wi-Fi, so I actually used yet another old Linksys router as a bridge. So it's plugging physically, and it's not acting as a access point. It's acting more as a Wi-Fi
hotspot, jump. Or, yeah.
Well, more like a device, like a Wi-Fi network bridge for it. So it plugs into physically, and the Wi-Fi bridges it to the other end of the Wi-Fi and then lets it connect in.
And this meter actually plugs into just a wall outlet or somewhere in your box?
Yeah, I just plug in I plug it into the wall to give it power. I plug the network into its network device so it can get to the Wi-Fi network and connects in there. And then it uses Zigbee to connect to the smart meters, and it pulls that. I mean, I'm not, from a security perspective, not a big Zigbee fan, but
the Zigbee smart meter. So you have a little thing that attaches onto, or the Zigbee smart meter, is that a PG&E smart meter, or is there?
Yeah, that's the PG. Well, actually, no. We have Southern California Edison here.
Okay.
It's SCE, and they have their meter there. And you go to their website and you say, you know what, register this device. Here's the identifying information. They then authorize the device through their website so that your device can now connect to your smart meter. So there's a reasonable amount of security in terms of authorizing
it's on the Zigbee protocol.
Exactly.
Right, so anybody can listen to it, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. But then again, it's just your trap. Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Anybody who has the know-how, so I'm not really concerned about my neighbors.
Right. Well, it's interesting. When you have physical issues of that nature, it's a much different level than having network access issues, right? Because a network access issue is just a script somewhere that someone wrote once, and now it looks at all ports on the internet. Like, that's a thing.
It's a matter of your exposure. To me, risk of physical means that somebody's targeting me, or it's somebody local, which is only maybe a couple dozen people in my local vicinity that could even do that.
And the data that you're leaking is power usage, which they can pick up other ways anyway. Right.
Right. And it's all anonymized over the traffic anyway. So unless they already knew who I was, which again comes back to being a very targeted attack.
Yeah. Not a big deal.
I don't think I pissed off anybody that much yet.
Alex, thank you so much. This has been great. I'm hoping that it's helpful to other people because, I know my network stuff, but I learn a lot from here. Like, just getting that foundation of understanding how you're doing it really does help me understand. Like, once you get this fundamental concept down, it's not extremely complex. But I have to say that it looks like it's going to be a lot of time for me to invest in understanding how to set it up. I think your script would be really useful for everybody. I hope that you do put that out there.
Yeah, once I get it refined, right now it's a little kludgy still in the code, so I want to get it cleaned up, and then I'll put that out in the community. So hopefully people will find that useful. You can still do most of the stuff, just not the zone, the simplicity of the zone rules. You end up having to manage your rules in that more complex kind of way.
Right, and I actually probably wouldn't end up having as many zones/ports as you, because I think my data center will be a NAS, one device, and it will be on the same network as my personal machines. I don't see a big reason not to do it that way, except for to know what the traffic flow is like. I guess that'd be kind of useful.
Yeah, and for me, it was mostly just, I didn't have to. I trust my Raspberry Pis, but why not?
yeah, totally.
For me, a lot of what I do at home is just a way to practice things I don't actually get to do at work. I do a lot of the similar type of stuff, but it's not as hands-on because I'm a little bit more high-level and policy and all of that. So I enjoy being able to really get my hands dirty with the tech.
Well, thank you very much, Alex, for doing this with me. Hey, and Alex, I think we'll just kind of hint that the next time we have to talk about Splunk and how that works.
Oh, we'll talk about Splunk. We'll talk about SysLogNG. We'll talk about the Elk stack. All that similar topic, I think, is just a good overall topic with all the various tools you can use.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks for being on GeekSpeak.
Oh, thank you very much.
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission, and GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. Use our stuff any way you'd like. Just let them know the geek said hi. I want to thank our patrons, Pat Hayter, Chris Irwin, Glenn Nelson, Alexis Chen, Mirigis Clenis, John Winston, Jonas Rulio, John Vassana, Double Busy, Joe Kyle, Christy Ramsey, Ben Powell, Ken Mazo, Judy Enos, Mike Coppersmith, Spider Rogue, Brandon Holloway, and also to 10 other people that chose not to be named. Thank you so much for contributing and making GeekSpeak possible. If you're interested in helping to contribute, please feel free to join us at geekspeak.org/support. I also want to thank our intern Chandler and Greg Merkley, who supports us from Canada, and also Michael Newman of Pet Star Music, who provides our theme song. And thank you for being here for episode 37 of our season 16. Do you feel like you covered everything you want to cover? Is there anything else you want to cover?
Yeah, I think I covered most things. Okay. I mean, there's still some more, obviously, VPN. It can do VPN access, but it only advertises that they do like PPTP for the VPN access, and then they also support IPsec for what they call peering between different routers. Uh-huh. But if you go into the command line interface, they have support for OpenVPN. They have support for L2TP over IPsec.
How do you turn that stuff on?
You just go into the command line. The command line is really handy because when you go in, you SSH into it, and actually you can in the web interface you can click open command line. It opens up a command line prompt to it. But from that you're in command line in the web interface. So from there you can go into what they call the configure mode. And what I love about this is in Linux when you hit tab, it kind of auto completes the commands or the path and things like that.
Yeah.
It lets you hit tab and it auto completes the config tree parameter options. So if you hit like set space and hit tab, it expands out all the top level options in the configuration that are your first set of options.
Right.
And then if you hit tab a second time, it not only shows you the list of them again, but also describes what each of them are. And so you can literally go through and just hit tab to kind of see all the different options and explore it pretty easily. You can also go into the config tree feature of within the web interface, which is basically a visual tree. Think old school files tree structure. Mm-hmm. So you just kind of expand it and you can edit and add parameters and configure it there. I find that to be a little slow. If you really know what you want to do, it's much easier for me to do command line. Well, that's true in general. I like command line over web interfaces, but
so the open.
Yeah, I just explored it. It was just nice, yeah. And you could just start tabbing, and you're like, "Oh, look at that! You got OpenVPN as an option there. Oh, look at that! There's this. Okay. I mean, it's just great."
So they basically don't have a web interface to the OpenVPN to turn that on and choose it. It's just PPT. But if you go into the command line, you can set it up, and then once you've set it up, it's that service is running and ready to go.
Yep, and there's a whole lot of stuff it can do that is like that sort of thing. Like example zones. I discovered zones because I hit set space, and then tapped into, I think it was under system, and then all of a sudden I expanded that. I'm like, oh, zones, what's this? So that was impressive when I saw that. It's just there's a lot of stuff that's buried into it that is supported, but they don't support it in that it's not in the web interfaces,
right?
And they don't advertise it on things on a lot of their documentation even.
Let me ask you one more thing about zones, because to me it just sounds like a zone is an alias, just a way of naming a port.
A zone, well, it could be a port. In bigger environments, a zone, they can virtualize a lot of that. So when you get into the higher end equipment, a lot of the world today is all virtual environments. All your servers are just virtual servers. Well, you also start getting into virtual definitions of your network organization. And you do have physical ports. You can also have that physical, but the devices are starting to virtualize even within that. So you can actually combine multiple ports in some environments to actually be part of the single zone. For example, redundancy. Oh, that was another thing we didn't cover. You can actually take two ports. Here's a fun thing. Two ports. Say I have my five ports and I only want three for inside. And I want redundancy on my outbound link. I could say two ports going to the internet. And I can then say one of them is going to use my high-speed cable and the other one's going to be a DSL connection that's going to be maintained. And both of them are going to stay connected all the time. And I can either tell it balance the load through the different means, or I can say always use the high speed. And if that fails, fail over to the slower network uplink.
Oh, that's awesome.
$50 router, man.
What's that setting called for the two ports? Two public ports.
I don't even recall. I haven't actually tested setting that up.
You just ran into it.
Yeah, I ran into it. I'm like, That's crazy.
That's so cool.
$50. It's just nuts what you could do for $50. It just blows my mind.
So cool.
Yeah, so there was that. Let's see, obviously, it does DHCP. Oh, here's something I want to do that I was going to get into that I want to tinker with is as part of the DHCP information I provide to the clients, you know, my laptop and stuff, I want to say, here is your web proxy. So it will also run a web proxy. Again, not in the web interface, but it's at the command line, I think. It might not be in the FIATA interface. It might be something that people just set up on it within the Linux environment. Mm-hmm. But then you can set up your web proxy so all your laptops and computers can, when they access the web, can go through your web proxy. You can also then set it up, say, to intercept the SSL traffic for decryption, which a lot of people like, don't like. You know, that depends on your thoughts there. From a privacy perspective, I don't want somebody else decrypting my traffic, but I'm okay with me doing it, or, you know, in case of a company, the company doing it. Mm-hmm. But then I can actually have additional inspection on that traffic so it can look for add-in intrusion detection or say these IPs or these domain names or these particular URLs. There's a lot of open source subscription services so you can hook in when you go through your proxy to block it. So say you go to a website, regular website, and they happen to have an advertising network that is not secured, and someone put malware into the advertising network, and all of a sudden your computer tries to establish a connection to some other website that you didn't want to go to, but that is trying to serve malware. Well, if the subscription, there's a lot of open source free subscription stuff out there for what's bad,
right?
You could block that
in your web proxy.
In your web proxy, so your home computers never ever hit that bad site. So it's a nice way to add an extra layer of protection.
Yeah.
Also can be done, the community talks about, on the forum communities at Ubiquity, they have a bunch of people talking about it, and something I want to take a look at, because that also sounds pretty cool to me.
Definitely.
So, oh yeah, quality of service, QoS. So you get in the pretty advanced QoS if you need to shape the traffic for your network. From a work perspective, you might say if you're all using one network for your voice over IP as well, you can say prioritize VoIP so that you're not getting weird intermittent voice when you're talking to somebody on your business lines. What, just because somebody's streaming YouTube, could say
priority
downstream YouTube and play, put a less priority on that.
Right, and for your home network, you might want to prioritize your personal network that's going to be running your television and stuff while the party's happening, and not your guest network because somebody's maybe downloading something.
Exactly. So you could do that sort of traffic shaping if you want, and all sorts of things you can do with traffic shaping that's pretty slick. Let's see. Yep. Yeah, it's got some, was it a radius server? No. I'll have to look into that. There's more features I haven't even gotten everything.
That's so great.
It's nuts how much is in here. Yeah, it blows my mind how much it can do. The NetFlow stuff, I think, is pretty cool. Deep packet inspection is such a great thing. It's just like to be able to use that in your firewall rules and say block Facebook or allow. Actually, it's more of an allow. Blocking is not as effective. I also think they need to. It's kind of their one of the proprietary features they have. Is their deep packet inspection definitions. So something you get from them. I wish they would open that up to say, I'll also allow you to define your own in some manner. That would be kind of neat. Because then
you could also have a community-driven one.
Right, so, say you have custom ones that override theirs when you know that theirs are not quite accurate. For example, some things are in streaming media when they really should be prioritized, say, as adult sites. So if you want to actually filter out or block that, you can then put it into the appropriate location, or even if you just want to log it, you don't know. You see it as streaming media, not as or even better would be if they did a hierarchical categorization of systems. But that's something I don't even see on the higher end systems, unfortunately.
Wow.
So yeah, it's nuts. It does a lot of things. So every time I think about it, I'm like, wow.
It's amazing. It's great. Do you do this kind of stuff at work?
I don't do this sort of setup, design, or configuration at work. So this is where I get to tinker with it at home. At work, I tend to do a bit more policy stuff. I'm actually not a networking guy. I'm more application security. I understand how the networking stuff works, and I understand the security implications to a lot of it. But you start getting down into the nitty gritty, I just defer you to my partner who knows right. networking stuff right. far better yeah. than I do.
I got to say, having a second router makes a lot of sense, because I have to say that once, you know, anytime you take any system down, I mean, I remember I used to have web servers and I have to take them down for a reason. I every once in a while to take out, you know, like a GeekSpeak website or something. And anytime I do that, there's like this level of stress about getting it back up, right? If you don't have load balancing or something, you don't have a second unit up. And so when I took my network down, my old router down, and put this in and set it up, once I got it kind of functional, I stopped. Because, you know, during that time, everybody lost traffic, is the house and our pool area. And so it got me nervous. So having a second one makes a lot of sense, because then, of course, you can just configure it, and then basically hot swap it almost.
Right. You're looking at minimal downtime, just unplug it, get it all set up, and plug it back in, and you quickly do a test, and everything seems to work. Or if it doesn't, you unplug it, and you swap it back.
Right, right.
And reboot everything, and you're good to go.